just finished learning your Chinese.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I just finished learning. Okay, so let's go through the scenario together. You just finished lighting Shabbos candles and miracle of miracles, the match went out in your hand. You didn't have to wave it back and forth or blow on it or anything else, to go out. So that's a very fortunate occurrence, because normally it's really annoying to have that charred match right next to your candlestick. It's kind of disjointed. It's incongruous, thank you, that's a much better wording. It's incongruous. If you don't want to have a charred candle match right next to your Shabbos candlesticks, it kind of ruins the ambiance a little bit. But what can you do? You're usually too nervous to throw them out, or for halachic reasons, or otherwise, people are sometimes, nervous to throw out the matches, and so they leave them in a special tray, or on the candle tray. But this week, the match went out in your hand. So are you allowed to carry the match to the garbage and throw it out there? Right? Or do you have to kind of just drop it? And again, this was the scenario that I described yesterday, very similar, right? You're picnicking for Shal Shodis, and you have some eggshells, you peel the egg, now you've got the eggshells in your hand. Those eggshells are muktzah, machmas, gufam, right? There's no use for them at all. They're nolad, practically. They were part of the food, now they're something different, they're just waste. And so they're muktzah, but they're already in your hand. So the question is, do you have to put it down in the closest possible location? Or once the muktzah is in your hand, are you allowed to carry it as far as you want or as you need? And we talked about yesterday the template for this being Rabbi Nechemia's position about carrying dirty dishes. So the Gemara basically suggested, it had this question, why are you allowed to carry dirty dishes off the table? I understand if it's tzarich limkomo and you hold that you can move something, right, which is a kli shemalasko leheter, letzorech mekomo, so then it makes a lot of sense why you can move the dirty dishes. You need to clear the main course in order to put out the dessert dishes. You need to clear the dessert dishes in order to put down your sfarim, and so you'd be allowed to move them letzorech mekomam. But if you hold that you're not allowed to move these kalim letzorech mekomam, so then what justifies clearing off the table after the meal? And to that the Gemara answers, midi dehava agraf shal rei, there's something disgusting, something unpleasant about having these dirty dishes on your table after the meal is over, and therefore you're allowed to carry it off your table. So the Rashba makes the following observation. He says, I understand very well, the same way that dirty dishes are disgusting on your table, they're also disgusting on the floor in between your table and the sink, or in between your table and the garbage can. And therefore, you're allowed to move it from your table to whatever the receptacle is for dirty dishes in order to avoid it being a graf shel rei on your table and anywhere in between. However, the Rashba says, if the justification for carrying the dirty dishes is that it's tzarich limkomo, right, that you simply need to clear space on the table for the next set of dishes or for your svarim, so then what gives you the heter to carry it all the way to the sink, to carry it all the way to the garbage? Just put it down, right, have a designated box, like the bus boys in the, in the hotel, have a designated bus box, right, next to your table, and that should be the furthest that you're allowed to move the dishes. And if you don't have the bus box, then just put them on the floor right next to your table. What gives you the right to move the dishes so far away if tzarich limkomo just requires that you clear off that particular space on the table? So the Rashba's inference is that again, Rabba, right, they both agree to the same halachos, and therefore, just like Rabba permits you to carry it all the way to the sink, midi dehava agraf shel rei, Rava would permit you to carry it all the way to the sink because of tzarich limkomo. In other words, you don't have to move it the minimum possible distance. You don't have to minimize the distance that you're walking with and moving the muktzah. Once you've picked it up, you can walk with it as far as you want. And that is the inference that the Rashba draws from our Gemara. Now, the Vilna Gaon challenges this inference based on an interesting Tosefta, which I really would like to read inside. I want to see if I can find a Gemara Sukkah. Okay. So while we're waiting, so the basic idea is that if you go nowadays, if you go nowadays to Yerushalayim, right, so you'll hear about 40 minutes before Shkia, there's a siren that goes off to warn people that this is the time of day, time of Erev Shabbos, that people are Mekabel Shabbos or begin to be Mekabel Shabbos. And this tradition of a Shabbos siren is a very ancient tradition. It goes back to the times of the Gemara and earlier. And even though they did not have an electric siren, but they had something that was almost as good, right, which were shofros and chatzosros, various loud musical instruments. And they would blow these shofars six times over the course of Erev Shabbos, and people who were familiar with the meaning of these shofar blasts would know that the first blast signaled that you should start, you know, packing up, closing up your store, and the second blast, you know, signaled, you know, that you should start doing certain things at home, and so on and so forth. Each of the shofar blasts were meant to signal another stage in the Shabbos preparations. Like, exactly, like bells in high school, exactly. This is going to be, this was the Erev Shabbos preparations. And the question is that the last of the bells was supposed to signify that it's Kabbalah Shabbos time. Right? In other words, that the last of the bells was supposed to signify that now everyone has been with Kabbalah Shabbos and you need to start observing, right, all of the halakos of Shabbos. The problem that this raises was that what about the person who's blowing the shofar? So the moment that he blows the shofar, right, that's Kabbalah Shabbos, the same way like saying Baruch Hu if you're making early Shabbos, right, the same way as if, you know, like a woman who lights candles usually is Mekabel Shabbos, the same way that when there is, you know, three, when Shkia comes and the sun sets below the horizon, it's Kabbalah Shabbos. In the olden days, the minhag of those towns was that by blowing the shofar the sixth time, so that was a Kabbalah Shabbos on behalf of the entire town, and then the shofar blower would be left with the shofar in his hand, and the shofar is potentially a mukta. So what the Gemara and the Tosefta say is that Kabbalah Shabbos is delayed for a couple of seconds after he finishes the last shofar blast, just long enough for him to put the shofar down. That's what we do, is we say Kabbalah Shabbos is not synchronous with the blowing of the shofar, right? But rather the Kabbalah Shabbos on behalf of the town is delayed a few moments after blowing the shofar so that he can have an opportunity to put the shofar down. Yes?
Is the adjudication of muksa ever dependent on whether the Isser of the Kli is through the Rabbanan? In other words, whether my ability to have a permitted use for a Kli or not is determined by the rights of the Rabbanan. Like in the case of the musical instrument, of course, it's the Rabbanan. Does that type of thing ever change how we would adjudicate muksa?
Once. If you think back to the Gzeir Shema Yitka, right, we're nervous if the glasses come apart that you might come to put it together and violate Bona or Makiba Patish. So there are poskim who say that if it's only a concern about Bona Drabanon or Makiba Patish Drabanon, so then we're not going to have that Gzeira. But in general, it's not going to make a difference. Meaning a Klisha Malakto Le'isser means even if its use is only Asr Midrabanon, it would still be classified as a Klisha Malakto Le'isser. Yeah, but I mean, if they're broken, so it's not going to help you see.
You're always out there.
I remember one time my glasses, the arm of my glasses broke. I was wearing them without the arm. And my rabbi called me over. I was in 12th grade. Rabbi Bergman was my rabbi. And he called me over and he said, it's not good for the eyes, you know, to wear them without the arm, because they're twisted a little bit. And you go to the eyeglasses shop and they measure exactly, you know, where your eyeball, you know, stares. And so it can be very hard on the eyes and cause pain if you wear them without it. So he told me that I should either, I should either just, you know, not wear them until I have a chance to repair them, or maybe fix them if I could with, with some scotch tape. But I do not advise wearing the glasses with only one arm. Okay, so that's what you have to do. You have to. You can't scotch tape it on Shabbos. The only solution is to wait until Sunday morning and take them to the optometrist. I just want to find this line in the Tosefta here. So this is what the Tosefta says. This is Tosefta in Maseches Sukkah, Perek Dalid, Halacha Zayin. In the Tosefta's, you need to be a Vilna Gaon in order to have found this Tosefta. It's not quoted, or this part of the Tosefta is not quoted anywhere in the Gemara, I don't think. And it's incredibly relevant to the Sugya, but like, you need to be a Vilna Gaon in order to pick out, right, this obscure Tosefta and discern its relevance to the question, right, of the match and the picnic. It says, Gomar Milikros, when the shofar blower or the trumpet blower finishes his last blast, Afilu Mecham Biyado, that even if a person has a mecham, some sort of a pot, right, that he's going to put into the oven, Ein Tomnin, you can't put it into the warming drawer. Again, we're talking about when the pot is muktza, or putting it in the warming drawer would not be allowed. Right, on Shabbos, Ein Tomnin Ella Manicho Baaretz, says the Tosefta. You have to just put it down on the ground. So the Vilna Gaon is puzzled. Why do you have to put this pot on the ground? Why can't you carry it back to the refrigerator from whence it came? Why can't you carry it to the nearest convenient place? It says Ein Tomnin, right, Ella Manicho Baaretz. And then the Tosefta continues, Afilu Ner Biyado. Right, even if you're holding a lit candle, right, in your hand, and you've got to put that lit candle someplace, right? So why not carry it to the menorah, to the candlesticks? The Tosefta says, no, ain no snow al gabe menorah. You can't put it, right, into the menorah. Ella manicho al gabe haaretz. You have to put it down on the ground. You can't keep on carrying that lit candle once Shabbos has begun. That's not out of concern that it's going to go out. You have to move it someplace in order to put it down, right? But you can't take another step, says the Tosefta, carrying that lit candle. And Chazan HaKnesses maniach chatzotzeres betoch hagog. The Chazan HaKnesses, the one who blew that trumpet, is not allowed. It's in his hand. Right, the trumpet's in his hand. He picked it up on Erev Shabbos when it was permissible to pick up the trumpet. Right, and it's still in his hand. So why can't he carry it home? No, says the Tosefta. There's a special box that they made for that trumpet, right, at the top of the roof on the tower where he's blowing it, and he's only allowed to carry it as far as that box and no further than that. Yes.
Usually it's not the last possible moment in life. And you say that maybe when you're early, but you don't do a set Shabbos until the top of time.
Yes.
No problem.
Right. So again, in this case as well.
This case means Shabbos is starting the minute the last blow.
So in this case, they're also mekabel Shabbos early. Right? But the point is that if you do everything on schedule, right, meaning that if the women put the put the pots, right, into the warming drawers on schedule, and they put their, again, because they didn't have electrical lamps, they lit their houses with candles, they put the candles into the candlesticks on schedule, so then there's no problem at all. The issue here is, what if they're running late? Right? And again, this was a communal Kabbalah Shabbos, where the entire city or the entire village was Mekabel Shabbos at the same time. And when that happens, right, there's no option for one individual to be Mekabel Shabbos later. The reason nowadays that we do it differently, right, is because there's dozens of shuls, right, within a couple of block radius, and each shul, right, is its own community. And Benosaf, Lakach, some people daven one day in one shul and another day, right, in another shul. And so there is no unified practice of early Kabbalah Shabbos in Garden Hills, and that's why we have some people are Mekabel Shabbos as early as Klag HaMincha, right, which now is like 6:30 or something like that, and some people are Mekabel Shabbos as late, right, as Shkia, which is like 7:45 or something like that this coming Shabbos. And so you have a very, very big range, and sometimes even within one family, like even though that's a little bit more, you know, sketchy, but you'll find, you know, that the husband will daven early Shabbos and he'll say Baruch Hu, and his wife will light candles right before he gets in the door, or if there's a, you know, quick chazan, and in Baal Tefillah, maybe even after, right, he gets in the door. I don't want to comment right on, right? Learning is always good. Learning is always good, unless you've got hungry kids at home who are, they usually have supper right at 6:30 or 5:30, and now they've already waited until 7:30. And then sometimes there are extenuating circumstances, as I can testify from personal experience.
You told us years ago, the husband would help the food to find the bathroom sink and so after, like, is it ready yet? It's not Shabbat yet, so if you need the time, it's okay.
It's not okay.
That's the best way to do it.
Not okay. Specifically, if the husband goes to early shul,
take Shabbos and shul, then the wife should be ready.
So she has to
be ready.
Be ready.
It's been, as you mentioned, it's been a long time since I learned that sugya. I do recall in the back of my head that there is, some sort of a kula, but I don't really remember the basis and the sources and the parameters and the qualifications and the conditions, and so I prefer not to speak about that at the time being. So this is a... Again, we're talking about, right, what Alvin was pointing out is that if we're talking about like the last minute, right, so then obviously there's no room, right? You just gotta drop it. Everything that you're holding, you gotta drop because it's shtiel already. But our Tosefta seems to be talking about an early Kabbalah Shabbos. Alvin wanted to know, why couldn't we just, do what we do here, right? And, so delay. I say, I'm lighting candles, right? But, according to all the Rishonim, except for whoever the one Rishon is who says it's automatic, but I can delay my Kabbalah Shabbos until afterwards, right? Baruch Hu maybe is more, and again, I don't know the exact, rules right now of what, is automatic Kabbalah Shabbos and what is, what you can delay, right? But again... That's automatic. Once you say Baruch Hu, that's a Kabbalah Shabbos, and you can say, "Oh, I'm saying Baruch Hu, but I'm only in the Kabbalah Shabbos, later." So the question here is, why can't we say that the blowing of the shofar, right, is not an automatic Kabbalah Shabbos, right? It should just be a conditional Kabbalah Shabbos, and therefore I can delay my Kabbalah Shabbos. I hear the shofar blast, very good. The community is even Kabbalah Shabbos. My Kabbalah Shabbos is after I put the candle into the candlestick. And again, the answer to that is that in Kew Gardens Hills, there's so many shuls and so many different, different practices that there is no uniform Kabbalah Shabbos, and that's why people can identify, right, with the minion, right, that davens that shula and say that I'm a Kabbalah Shabbos together with that minion. But when an entire village or an entire city, an entire community is Mekabel Shabbos at the same time, so then everybody in that community is bound by that Kabbalah Shabbos. Theoretically, I don't think that this exists, in Kew Gardens Hills, and it's a little bit, unfortunate, but if you had a shul, right, where all the people daven in that shul, always daven in that shul, and only daven in that shul, and they always daven together for all the tfilos, and they always attend each other's, simchas, and everybody in the shul attends everybody else's simcha. Again, situation where it's not like you're davening for convenience, but it's like everyone really sticks with that one shul, right? So then, theoretically, and the shul has one minyan, and the minyan makes early Shabbos, and everybody who's a member of that shul would be bound to be mekabel early Shabbos together with the shul's minyan. But I don't think that that's... In bungalow colonies, right, where there's only one minion, so that would be the situation. But again, you could have that. Wow. So then they got him later.
It just gets horrible.
Woodstock.
Yeah. Don't go to the country tomorrow.
Thank you for the tip. I know the question is whether everyone there is going to be Makabel Shabbos at the same time.
Yeah.
And what if all the minyan goers are mekabel Shabbos at the same time? Is that binding on the on the non minyan goers? So these are interesting questions. But again, for the purposes of the Gemara, right, once that last trumpet sounds, so it's Kabbalah Shabbos, and that's why you have to put down the candle on the ground where you're standing. Don't take any more steps with it. Put down the pot on the ground where you're standing. Don't take any more steps with it. And the Chazan HaKnesses, right, has to put down the trumpet, right, somewhere on that rooftop. He's not allowed, right, to carry it home. Again, the reason seems to be because we have to minimize, right, our walking with or carrying of muktzah. So the Zohar Gaon says, how does one resolve that? How does one harmonize that with the Rashba's inference from our Gemara? Okay, it's very, very difficult to resolve them. It's very, very difficult. The poskim definitely point out, they assemble a range of proofs, Gemaras which seem to indicate that you can walk as far as you want with muktzah, like our Gemara, Gemaras that seem to indicate that you can't walk as far as you want, like the Tosefta that the Vilna Gaon uncovered. And there's three basic compromises that the poskim come up with. The first basic compromise is that we'll differentiate between a kli and a non-kli. So in other words, if you're holding something which is a kli shemalafto le'isser, like in our Gemara, right, we're talking about a dirty plate, right, which is a kli, well, it's even lafto le'heker, right, so we'll allow you to carry it as far as you want, because in general, the halakos of kalim, when it comes to muktzah, are more lenient than the halakos of non-kalim. And so the Mishnah Brura paskins that a kli shemalafto le'heker, or a kli shemalafto le'isser, you're allowed to carry, right, as far as you want, like the plates that you can carry from the table to the sink, and you don't need to put them into the bus bag. However, the Mishnah Brura says, if something is muktzah machmas gufo, right, like a rack, let's say that somebody comes over, a child comes over and puts a rack into your hand, right, so in your house, right, next to in your dining room table, right? So you can't carry the rack back outside, says the Mishnah Brura. You need to just put it down, right, on the floor next to your table, right, or on the table, depending on where you prefer to have that rack, right? But you can't walk with the rack or with that branch. You need to put it down wherever it is. Right? If something is not the kli, so then you would need to put it down right away. That seems to be the compromise of the Mishnah Brura, klisha melachto leheter or leisser, as opposed to something which is not a kli at all. He points out that there is a machloka as haposkin. Do we care about whether you picked up or you're holding the muktzah in a permissible way or an impermissible way? In other words, let's say I pick up a klisha melachto leisser, the tzorech mekomo, because I needed to clear the table, right, in order to bring new dishes, or I needed to clear the table to bring tfarim. I picked it up, the heter. It's letzorech mekomo. So maybe that's the only situation when I can carry it all the way to the sink. But what if I picked it up, the isser? Let's say there was no tzorech mekomo. Let's say we're talking about a hammer, right, which is on the top of a bookshelf, and I don't need it to crack coconuts, and I don't need the space on the bookshelf. And I just saw it there, and for whatever reason, I forgot that it was Shabbos, or I forgot that it was muktzah, and I picked it up to put it back in the toolbox, and now I'm halfway up the stairs, and I realize, oh my gosh, I picked up, right, this hammer, and it's not tzorech gufo, and it's not tzorech mekomo. Am I allowed to bring it all the way to the toolbox because it's a kli? Or do I have to put it down right away because I didn't have permission to pick it up? So that is the machlokas haposkim. The most prominent posik who takes a position on this is the Magen Avraham, which is one of the two major commentaries on the side of Shulchan Aruch, and he says, not a problem. You can keep on carrying it to the toolbox because, again, it's a kli shemalachto le'isser. It's a kli. There are circumstances when it's permissible to pick it up, and therefore, and therefore, you're allowed to keep on bringing it to the toolbox. And there are some, I forget who who extend this even to a person who picked up the hammer b'mezid. In other words, he became a Baal Tshuva in the middle, right, in the middle of carrying the hammer. First he picked it up, right, and he said, I know I'm not allowed to, right, but I'm going to move it anyhow because I just can't tolerate having that hammer on top of my bookshelf. And then he's halfway up the stairs and he says, oh my gosh, what have I done? Right, you know, it's like I'm a good Shomer Shabbos Jew, and here I went and picked up this hammer. So there are posts who say that if you become a Baal Tshuva in the middle of carrying the muktzah, as long as it's a kli shemalachto, you know, anything, right? As long as it's a kli, you can carry it all the way to your destination. Is the toolbox? Yeah, the toolbox is probably a basis for a kli shemalachto. No, but you might be allowed to open the toolbox because it's tzaraf limkomo, meaning you can't put your hand through the cover of the toolbox, right? So the toolbox is a klisha malachto le'isser, but you need its place. In other words, it's occupying space that you need to put your hand into. So you're allowed to open up the toolbox in order to put your hand through that space because you need it.
You have to pull the toolbox through.
So the question is closing the toolbox is more problematic. You might not be allowed to close it afterwards because then you don't really need the space.
Don't need to do it on the
Shabbos.
Mm-hmm. These compromises that you, as you said, they don't help with the Tosefta. The Tosefta, those are kalim. The shofar is a kli, the pot's a kli. I forgot what the term was.
Well, the candle is not a kli. Right. But the chatzot, the chatzotzeres is a kli, so the Vilna Gaon solves the shofar problem. And again, it's more likely a trumpet than a shofar. And the Vilna Gaon says, if you remember yesterday, we talked about a kli shekol melachto le'iser, that nobody ever uses it for a purpose, right, which is permissible, which you could use it for on Shabbos. So the Vilna Gaon says the trumpet is something which is kli shekol melachto le'iser. Nobody uses it. In the olden days, apparently, shofars you would sometimes use to drink water out of, like a horn that you might get in a bar or something like that, right? That you can use for drinking water. And so the shofar is a
battle for the kid. No. A
trumpet?
Yeah. Not a trumpet.
The shofar. The shofar can work.
The trumpet you could use to put something on, like a shaker
head. So again, yeah. Muktzah, right?
Don't even try.
Don't even try.
The
way
that the
they use
if it's a female trumpet.
On Shabbos.
It's not a male. I've never heard of that.
Have you heard of that?
I never heard of that.
What?
Right. I mean, there's a difference between like blowing the tequilas and making music with it. Right?
You heard of that?
Musical
stuff.
I've not heard
of that. Not in Israel.
You're talking about anyone in the
Shabbat. Any prison that is not good bed
here.
Not yet. So coming back. So the Vilna Gaon says this chatzot, you know, this trumpet is klisha kol melachto le'iser, like a light switch or a computer, right, or a phone, and therefore he says it's muktzah masrufo because it's useless on Shabbos. So that's how he solves the trumpet problem. The question about the pot is a little bit more difficult because I have to check this Tosefta again. A pot, you would think, is a klisha melachto le'heker, right? It's full of food, unless the food is raw. Right, so maybe because the food is raw, so then it's not edible on Shabbos, and let's say flour, right, is muktzah machmas gufo on Shabbos because it's not edible. Raw rice is muktzah machmas gufo on Shabbos because it's not edible and it's not a kli and it's not raw rice. People use raw rice for sushi. Raw eggs are not muktzah because chasanim, there's a big debate about raw meat, right, which we talked about I think 2 weeks ago because of the, what was the name of that dish?
Steak
tartare, right? It is served in like two kosher restaurants, so maybe that means that raw meat is considered to be edible. And on the other hand, like most people don't eat steak tartare, so maybe it's not considered to be edible. So that's a discussion. But again, if raw meat, that would be considered to be muktzah. So I'm wondering whether we're talking about a pot over here, which is full of raw rice or some other concoction which is totally inedible raw, that would render the pot also mukta machmas gufo, and that's why you'd have to drop it, because the kli is now a basis to mukta machmas gufo, and it obtains the status, right, of the object that the basis for, and so you would have no choice but to put it down because it doesn't have the din of a kli, but rather it has the din of its contents, which are mukta machmas gufo. And I think that's probably how the Vilna Gaon was reading the Tosefta. Right, so all of those cases in the Tosefta then will be talking about cases of things that don't have the halachic status of a kli. That would be my guess.
Is that 99?
Is that 99?
No, 98.
Well, the two conditions in order for it to be unanimous are, number one, you picked it up a heker, right? And number two, it's a kli. And as long as you fulfill those conditions, you know, all the posts can agree that it matches our case. You picked it up with Tzorek Mekomo, right? So it's a kli, and you picked it up a heter. Therefore, everyone agrees you can carry it as far away as you want. Once you depart from the paradigm of the Gemara, once you change one of those two dimensions, either you say we're talking about something which is not a kli, so then halacha lemaisa, we say you're not allowed to move it as far as you want. And if you pick it up be'isser, if you pick up a kli be'isser, there is a machlokes, and the Mishnah Berurah seems to paskin that you are allowed to move it as far as you want, as long as it is a kli.
Is there any difference between a kli from machlokes and a kli from the rabbanim and the
galosim? Is there a difference between a kli? No, there doesn't seem to be a difference. There's a debate about, let's say, something like tefillin, whether it's considered a kli shemalachto leheter or a kli shemalachto leisser. And the reason for that is because the reason we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos is extraneous to the 39 malachos. It's because, well, Shabbos is an oath and tefillin is an oath, and we want each oath to have a solo, right? Because, you know, when you do the duet, right, so each of the, you know, the uniqueness and the specialness of each individual voice gets lost. And so there are certain mitzvos that we say, you know, need to have their solo and need to not, you know, have another mitzvah proclaiming the same message, right, as this mitzvah. And so Shabbos is an oath and tefillin is an oath, and we want each of them to sort of have their own, you know, opportunity to shine. So that's not a malacha issue. That's an issue which comes from outside, right, almost of Hilchos Shabbos. And so there's a little bit of a controversy whether the tefillin will be considered a kli shemalachto le'isser on account of that. But if it's within the framework of the malachos, we usually would say that it makes no difference whether it's malacha d'oraisa or malacha d'rabbanan, it's going to be considered a kli shemalachto le'isser. So the Mishnah Berurah says that if it's not a kli, you have to put it down right away. Right, so that means that if you've got this eggshell, right, which is mukta machmas gufo, it's not a kli, you would think, according to Mishnah Berurah, that you should have to put it down right away. You should not be allowed to carry the eggshell into the garbage pail, right? Because it's not a grass shell ring. You just put it in the grass behind you, and it's not going to bother anybody, and it's not a kli, so even though it's into your hand, behefter, you can't move it any further than is absolutely necessary. So the Mishnah Berurah, would require you to put the eggshell down on the grass behind you. Again, if it's at your dining room table, carry it to the garbage, because anywhere in between your table and the garbage where you put it down, it becomes a grass shell ray. But outside, you would have to put it down right away. Rav Shlomo Zalman argues with the Mishnah Berurah. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, what do you mean? It was bal yadcha behefter. There's no isser, right, to peel an egg, right, it's totally permissible. You pick up the egg is a food, right? It's not muksa at all. And now you peel the egg, and you're left with the white and the yolk on the one hand, and the shell on the other hand. So the shell was in your hand, the heter. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says you should be allowed to carry it wherever you need to carry it on Shabbos, and that's his psak halacha. Once you put it on the table, so then you cannot touch it.
No, you can't move it.
You can't move it. You leave it there unless it's causing unpleasantness, in which case it's a grass already, and you can move it as far as you need to. If it causes unpleasantness, but if you're on a picnic, right, you might have to leave it there in your garden until Motzai Shabbos, and then go out with the flashlight, right, and clean up after yourself. That's an interesting question. Are you allowed to put it there on purpose, and on your tablecloth, right? In which case it becomes a graph sovei. Here there actually might be an even better solution, meaning if you don't mind having the eggshell on your tablecloth, right, until the end of the meal, you just put it there on the tablecloth, or on the you know, on the blanket or whatever it is that you're making the picnic on. And then at the end of the meal, presumably there are some things that are mutter on the, you know, on the tablecloth, and some things that are aser, and so you just wrap it up, it's a bus, it's a davar aser, with a davar hamutter, and you're being mekalkel the eggshells min hatzad, because you're not touching them, you're doing the tzorech davar hamutter for those non-muksa objects that are also wrapped up inside of the tablecloth, and so that would be, that would be a permissible way to dispose of them, but again, it's gotta be that you're okay with those eggshells being in front of you for the duration of the meal. So that's exactly our Gemara's case. It's a kli, right? Shemalachto le whatever, and you're moving it. Right, either midin graf shel rei, right, or tzorech mekomo. The eggshells are tilkel min atzad. You're not touching them. Right? You're moving them by moving the plate, and you're doing it with tzorech davar hamotor. Right, so that would be permissible. That's exactly what our Gemara is discussing. Right. So again, the old. Yeah, it's actually interesting. The Gemara discusses this. You know, it talks about, you know, cherry pits and, you know, apricot pits and stuff like that. And the Gemara actually says exactly what you're saying, that you're not allowed to, you know, walk with them or carry them or whatever it is. You just got to sort of spit them out behind you. And again, the rationale behind, you know, would be, you know, don't spit it out in front of you, that it becomes a graf shel rei, and you've got to move it to spit it out behind you in order to avoid making it a graf shel rei, but don't carry it more than you need. Again, we're sort of like, it's sort of like picnic style, right? But in those days, even in your house, right, you would just kind of spit, you know, pits on the floor, and it wouldn't really faze anybody. So the post can point out this is another example, right, of how muktzah depends on the makom, right, and the shah, and it changes from place to place and from time to time. And nowadays, we've got, you know, wooden floors, tile floors, whatever it might be. You can't just spit out an apricot pit onto the floor behind you. It's a graf shel rei even on the floor. And since no matter where you spit it out, it becomes a graf shel rei, so you would have permission to stand up and walk to the garbage and spit it out. So that's, you know, that would be permissible nowadays, but I guess if someone just doesn't care about having the pits, you know, on the floor, so then they would be allowed to spit it out. I'm actually wondering, what's the halacha, right, if I wanted to keep it in my mouth, right, keep on chewing it or whatever in my mouth while I carry it? I think it should be mutter, right, that's toko begufo. You're allowed to carry, again, the basic things, right? The most basic way to carry muktzah in a permissible way, no matter what type of muktzah it is, muktzah machmas gufo, muktzah machmas kashrus kis, whatever it is, if you're carrying it without using your hand, and it's not the normal way to carry it, it's always allowed, right? So the package that's got delivered, and you kick it inside with your foot, right, it's allowed. And let's say that there's a diamond, right? It's muktzah machmas kashrus kis, right? And somehow, right, you find it, right, on the sidewalk. So you don't want to pick it up. It's mukta machmas kashrus kis. So you know what you should do? You should put it in your mouth, right, and carry it home in your mouth. Right? No problem at all to carry mukta in your mouth. Right? As long as it's not the normal way of carrying mukta, not a problem at all. Pick it up with your elbows. Right? Again, it's not going to be a problem. Right? All the only time it's a problem with carrying mukta is either if you're using your hand, right, or if you're moving it in the normal way. So again, if you're carrying these shells inside of your mouth, walk with them wherever you want. Not because you're allowed to walk with mukta wherever you want, but because you're not using your hand.
But then you may be lying down on the floor.
Let's focus on the mukta, you know, dimension.
We have an error. But
if you're going $100 in the pan, how would you open to one side?
We're supposed to pick it up with your hand, you
know? Yes. Okay. Yes. Or you can take off your shoes and pick it up with your toes.
If you're good.
Hmm?
If you're that good.
Yeah, it shouldn't be so hard. I'll try maybe later. And you draft the $100 bill, okay, and I'll.
By the way, we had a case many years ago in December of Washington Heights. There was a store in the corner, food store. They were open 7 days a week. But on Yom Kippur, the owner came in to Yiska. And after Yiska, he took out $100 bill and he threw it out the beam up.
Oh, boy!
Well, Tom went to school probably.
So they waited. And it fell down, and they kicked it underneath the beam.
Okay.
That's what they did.
Yeah, there you go. That's a classical.
This goes back in the 1950s. $100 bill was
not $100
bill today, like
$1,000.
Right.
I'd rather that they had not waved it like with their hands, because you don't want to use blow it with your mail, and then you can pick it. To blow it. Yeah, that seems to be. Or you could pick it up with your teeth and put it, you know, wherever it belongs.
Anyway.
Okay, so 103, I'm going to leave you to ponder on your own. Is there any way to harmonize Reb Shlomo Zalman's sack that you're allowed to carry those eggshells, right, all the way to the garbage, right, with the Shabbos siren sack, which says that it's mukta machmas lufo, you need to put it down right away? That is the question, whether there's any way to harmonize it.
Really?
Yes.
Because when you picked up the egg, okay, so not only be'eter, the entire thing was mutar. It was not mukta. At the time when you pick up the egg, it was not mukta at all. It was food.
Okay.
Okay? The shofar was, even you picked up the eter, quote-unquote,
Erev Shabbos,
but it was mukta machmas lufo as is. Here you created the situation by peeling the egg.
Is that why it's is a shofar is a trumpet mukta on Erev Shabbos?
It's mukta machmas gufo on Shabbos itself, right?
Yeah,
the egg is never mukta machmas gufo on Shabbos. The shells might be, but when you picked up the egg, when you used the egg, even on Shabbos itself, you didn't pick up mukta.
The What about
the definitely avoids the problem.
Yeah.
Right. So I've discovered personally that when the garbage can is empty, I don't mind so much peeling the egg over the garbage can. But right, when the garbage can is full and full, right, the smell comes out, so sometimes it's unpleasant.
You have no choice. You can rinse it off then. No,
the rule is, right, is that you don't. Right, so I think what Mr. Ben Chaviv is suggesting is the following, if I were to put it into perhaps, you know, more obtuse, you know, terminology, that the characteristic, right, which make a shofar or a trumpet or a pot of raw food, right, or a candle muksa, right, are already present in that candle or pot, right, before Shabbos begins. And therefore, right, when you pick it up, you're picking up something, right, which already contains, right, the potential to become, you know, muksa, meaning as soon as Shabbos comes, this object is destined, right, to become a muksa. And therefore, perhaps it is considered to be a little bit, right, picking it up be'isser, as opposed to the egg, right, where the egg is permissible and you're allowed to eat it on Shabbos, and there's no guarantee or destiny that this egg is going to be, you know, peeled on Shabbos. And even if it is, the peel maybe is insignificant. It's not considered a separate, you know, entity, and therefore, right, the egg as a whole, right, is considered to be a more permissible object, right, than the path or the candle. So the difference would be then, right, that either the pot and the candle are less permissible, and the egg is more permissible, more like a kli, right, shemalachto le, you know, the iser, right, even though afterwards the eggshells transform into muktzah machmas gufo, right, but perhaps they're more permissible because they were part of the egg, right, which was a food, or perhaps that the act, right, of picking it up is a more permissible act. And I think there's other solutions also. You could argue that, you know, that somebody who's late on Erev Shabbos, right, perhaps that's not such a big, you know, picking it up a heter as picking up an egg. Right? I mean, she should have been on time. Right? She shouldn't have been holding this pack, right, when the last shofar blew. And so therefore, maybe there is a certain element of negligence when she is holding this pack, right, at the last moment. But the shaila is, what about the trumpet blower? Right, there's no negligence at all. Right, but again, that the idea there might be that you know, that we're supposed to organize, right, the communal Erev Shabbos preparation, right, in a way that minimizes the necessity of carrying muktzah even beheter. Right? And so maybe the idea is that the community has an obligation to create a storage box for the trumpet so that you don't have the Chazan HaKnesses running through the streets with a shofar or with a trumpet after, right, the sixth, you know, trumpet blast has already blown. I think there's a Gemara someplace that talks about it's not right, you know, because some communities will live close by and other communities will live far away, and it, you know, it doesn't make sense that in one community the, you know, Shabbos should come in 1 minute after the last trumpet blast, and in another community it should come in 10 minutes after the last trumpet blast, and how are people going to tell the time anyhow? And so we prefer that there's a fixed amount of time, that there's a safe box to store the trumpet, you know, in every community, and you have the amount of time that it takes to store the trumpet in the box. I think other people talk about there may be a difference between whether the heter for picking up the kli is a heter that's internal to Hilchos Muktzah, such as there's a heter to pick up a kli from Alachu L'Isser, the Tzorach Mikomo. That's an internal to Hilchos Muktzah heter, as opposed to perhaps the heter, which is like I picked it up on Erev Shabbos, that's not a Hilchos Muktzah heter. That's a, you know, a heter because it just wasn't Shabbos. And so the only time perhaps that will permit it is when you have an actual free, you know, pass, a dispensation, saying that we're suspending Hilchos Muktzah when it comes to this kli from Alachu L'Isser. So there are compromises. But it's interesting that Shlomo Zalman himself, as far as I'm aware, does not articulate any of these compromises. He just says his rule, since you picked up the egg, beheter, therefore you're allowed to carry the eggshells as far as you want.
This is with the egg.
Yes, it's no lad, definitely. It's probably
The shell. The shell. Yeah.
Right, because it transformed from being a food into being waste.
And you can actually make it into a waste.
Yes. But again, it would be no lad. And so, you know, we have to consider, based on these various compromises, what's the din of the match. Right? If you're holding this match, you're a Mekabel Shabbos. So do you have to put it down right away, like the pot full of raw food, and like the candle, right, that a person's holding when the last, you know, shofar blows, right? Or are you allowed to carry it all the way to the garbage, like the eggshell? I don't know. Yeah, which compromise do you want? Mr. Ben Chavir, you have the first compromise. So...
The match?
Yeah.
The match was also like the sofa.
Because at the moment that you're holding it, it was muktzah machmas gufo.
Exactly.
You'd have to put it down right away.
The match itself. The match itself is.
So when you held it, you're okay.
Because the shell was part of an entity which is mutar all the time. The shofar, it's like the shofar. What did we say for the shofar? You have to leave immediately, leave, put it down. That again, it's, now it's the same as the shofar.
Okay.
If an animal finds a day, a match that doesn't look just as a woman might stand it, you have to put it down right away. You can hide it down the head of the back on the side.
Well, it went up by itself. In my case, it went up by itself. I know my wife, I think, just puts it down. Like there's a special tray. You put it down and let it burn itself out. Okay, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, that's why we're pondering, is there any permissible way, right, to actually carry the mass to the garbage?
Don't make the bracha, very good.
Doesn't make the bracha until after.
She made the bracha and it went out in her hand. They throw that in the mass.
Right, no, you're right. I always try to come up with realistic scenarios, but I wasn't. You're definitely right. That it would be a haptic in between lighting the candles and making the bracha. And the bracha on candles is weird because you make it afterwards and not before. But right. So the question is, what makes it special, and would that allow for larger haptic? But I'm not prepared to talk about
that. How about
How about Yontif? Okay, so that's an excellent question, and that actually leads us to the next subject. So the next question that we're going to talk about is, what is the status of matches on Yontif? Okay, because the question is, let's say, again, my printer ran out of ink, this time for real. Last time it wasn't running out of ink, but now it's really out of ink. So we'll have to, I'll get you the next sheet tomorrow, but the basic question is, let's say it's the second night of Yontif, you have Yontif Sheni Shalgalios, and you're out of those colored Hanukkah candles to take flame from your stove and use it to light the Yontif candles, so you want to use a long match. Is that allowed, or is that not allowed? Now, you'd be surprised, you would think, like, what could be wrong with that? You're allowed to spread, flame, right, to put the flame from the, from the stove to a candle, and from the candle to another candle, so why can't I do it from the stove to a match, right, and from the match, right, to another candle? You'd think, what could possibly be wrong with that? So we need to read the Gemara, and we'll again build it up from the Gemara, but it is not so simple that matches are the same as candles. Matches may be very different from candles. So let's take a look. Not tomorrow, no. I'm afraid I'm going to leave you in suspense over
over the weekend.
Well, there actually are some things. I've just been skipping the simple ones. Right, so the actual parameters of graph survey, I don't really have very much to say about. Like if it causes unpleasantness on Shabbos, then you're allowed to move it as far as you need to move it. A mash does not fit into the category of graph survey unless the person is actually very disgusted by it. I think it may also depend on where the matches are and how aesthetically the tray where you put it out is arranged. If it's actually like disgusting, so then you might be allowed to move it. Although there would be an obligation from Erev Shabbos to take whatever steps are necessary in order to make it that next week it shouldn't be so displeasing. So let's take a look. Let's take a look at the next sugya. Esrei Abayi l'Rava. Right, so Abayi is going to have a number of challenges now. To Rava, this idea that you can move around the kli shemalachto l'heter for pretty much anything, kli shemalachto l'iser, l'tzorach ufa, l'tzorach makobo, you've got some challenges. Challenge number one, medocha, you've got this spice grinder, and yesh ba shum, metalfel inosa, if it's full, right, if it has food inside of it, so then you can move it around because it is a basis, right, for the food. It's considered a klishim lachtol lehefter. It's used for storage and transportation, right, of the spices. But in lav, if it's empty, ein metaltel nosa, you cannot move it because there's a klishim lachtol leisser. If it's not full of spices, then its main purpose is not storage and transportation, but rather the creation, the grinding of spices, which is not allowed on Shabbos. And the implication seems to be that a kli shemelachto leisser cannot be moved with tzorech gufo or tzorech mekomo. And the Gemara says, no, that's not the correct implication. Hacha b'mayaskinon mechama letzel. We're not talking about someone who wants to move the spice grinder with tzorech gufo. That would be allowed to move it to put spices in it, right? Or tzorech mekomo because you want to use a place where it's occupying. We're talking here about a case where it's in a place where it might get damaged and you're moving it to make it more safe, which is not moving it l'torech Shabbos, you're moving it for Motzai Shabbos, and you don't want it to be intact for grinding your spices. Again, Eisvei Abai has a second kasha. Shavin Beishamai and Beis Hillel both agree Shem Kitzev Olav Basar, that if you cut meat on this cutting board, Sha'asar L'Kaltelo, you're not allowed to move it around. Again, the cutting board is some sort of kli Shemalafko L'Isser. On why are you not allowed to move it? It must be that a klishim malachto l'isser may not be moved the Torah Mikomo, the Torah Kufo. The Gemara says, no, hachanami mechama l'tzel. You're allowed to move it the Torah Kufo, the Torah Mikomo. You just can't move it if it's in danger of getting damaged. And now we get to the line about the matches. The ha ditnan. And what about this mishnah? In somchin es hakedera bevikas. If you have a watch, right, which sort of like balances on a point, right, and you want to cause it to stand straight up, right? You took it off, right, the oven, whatever it is, and now you don't want it to wobble and topple over, so you have a good idea. There's a piece of kindling, of firewood, and if you put the firewood underneath the wok, it's going to stand straight up, and it's not going to spill its contents. Are you allowed to use that firewood to support the wok or not? Right, and similarly, the Mishnah says, the chayin bedeles, that you also can't use a piece of firewood as a doorstop. So this is the Mishnah. So the Gemara is troubled.
Like a broomstick, the same thing.
Not like a broomstick. What's the difference between a piece of firewood and a broomstick?
A broomstick, you use for hand. And a firewood. The firewood is always much for young people.
Okay, here's the fundamental difference. Right? In order for something to be a key, it needs to be usable and reusable. So the firewood is usable, but it's not reusable. The broomstick is reusable. And therefore, the broomstick is considered to be a kli. The firewood is not considered to be a kli. In fact, this Gemara is actually the source that anything which is not reusable, anything which is basically one-time use only, cannot be considered a kli. Now, matches. Are matches similar to broomsticks or are matches similar to firewood?
Firewood.
They're like firewood.
Take a used match and put it on a fire. It'll light up.
I think I've tried it once or twice.
You can start a fire.
And
it's supposed to fire.
I depends how long you the match.
I said when I put screws in to fill the hole, I put a match.
Right, that's right.
I show of hands, how many people do you use those matches?
Let me ask you, when you're lighting the menorah of Hanukkah, right? You light the Shabbos, right? And you have a long match, blows out. What do? You go back to the Shabbos, and you relight the long match.
You use the Shabbos.
Why not?
I've done that.
When do you use the Shabbos?
I use the Shabbos.
The Shabbos, you have oil.
Oh, yeah, okay. I use two candles.
I don't use that.
Interesting. Okay. There's a big debate about whether candles are considered reusable, right? Because on the one hand, right, a candle, basically, every inch of the candle, right, you can only use once, right? Once the fuel is consumed, right, so you can't use it again. So there are some people who say that candles are considered to be one-time use only, right, because they're made to produce, you know, light and heat, and every single inch of the candle, right, once it's used, it's never going to be used again. Other people say, no, look at the candle, right, as a totality, right, and the candle can be used multiple times, blown out and then relit. Right, so the candle as a whole perhaps is considered to be a kli. That's a major debate amongst achronim. The consensus of poskim seems to be, although they may not just be familiar with the practice here in Rabbi Olbaum Shul, right, but the fact is that poskim do seem to assume that matches are not reusable, just like the firewood, right, is not reusable. We may have to update the sociological data, and that might actually cause a change, right, in the status of matches. We'd have to mail, to Rabbi Gelber in Mathersdorf and see whether, whether he, would consider this to be significant. But again, so basically, this firewood, you're allowed to use it for a fire. You're not allowed to use it as a doorstop. Right, so the question is, matches, right, you're using it to transfer flame from the stove to the candle. You would think that it should be similar to using firewood to kindle a fire. Here's a Sunday Monday, we'll talk about why that might not be exactly the same. I'm going to be away tomorrow.
Who's coming tomorrow?
Rabbi Meirov, I think.
Who?